If Donald Trump was caught on the White House lawn eating a live baby, the members of Congress would go, well, we're still going to pass the tax cuts.
Well, tax cuts aren't going to just pass themselves.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's one reason.
I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. To the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am.
Yes, I'm stuck
from
in the
Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles. This is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 in Ridgecrest in China Lake, California. Up in Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast, 106.7 KSO in Cottage Grove. Out in Lancaster, Pennsylvania on 92.9 WLRI. In Maui, Hawaii on 88.5 KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN 94.1. In Palinville, New York on 102.9 WLPP. In Grand Rapids, Michigan on WPRR. And let's see, what else? Oh, in New Orleans on 102.3 WHIV, Washington, D.C.'s 105.5 FM, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every single day of the week on the internet. It's a fresh show 5 days a week. You can hear us on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR Revolution 99, Deprogrammed Radio, Detour Talk, Radio Sputnik, and many other fine affiliates across this great nation and this great globe of ours. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. We will try to open the phones in a little bit. It has been, if you're in our Southern California listening area or anywhere else listening live, we'll try to get to as many calls as we can today, but I have a lot to cover as well. Our phone number, if you want to get in line, is 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735. It has been in another insane week in the era of Donald Trump, or President Chaos, as I think I described him earlier this week on one of our shows, since it's become clear that he is addicted to freaking people out. That is his thing. That is his drug. If a day or two goes by without everybody talking about some crazy thing that he did or said or tweeted, he just doesn't feel like he's presidentin' enough. So his threats against North Korea continue to destabilize the world. His threats of pulling out of the Iran nuke treaty, despite his own Secretary of State and chairman of his own military Joint Chiefs of Staff this week, both confirming that Iran is honoring the agreement in compliance with the treaty. That threat is also likely to make it more difficult to ever get a nation like North Korea, much less any other nation, to even come to the table. Why would they trust an agreement from the U.S. if, you know, Trump just goes out and breaks them, as he continues threatening to do? He also tweeted, yes, fake news about an Iranian ballistic missile launch over the weekend that never actually happened. Just some of the stuff we've been covering this week on the broadcast. Then, of course, the GOP's latest zombie-like threat to gut the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, has now gone down once again in flames, at least for now, though Republicans are already threatening to bring it back after the first of the year, if not sooner. And the Trump administration continues to try and sabotage the Affordable Care Act, as open enrollment is set to begin on November 1. The length of that open enrollment period has been cut in half by Trump this year. And even worse than that, by the way, if we can get to it. So do you think repeal and replace is really dead? Really? Do you think the Republicans will ever stop trying to take away health care from millions of Americans under the Affordable Care Act? 818-985-5735 is our phone number. Also this week, Democrats picked up a few more state legislative seats from Republicans in special elections this week. One in a district up in New Hampshire that went to Trump by 59% back in November. In the meantime, the GOP has taken zero seats from Democrats since last November's election. And a proud, certified, homophobic, Islamophobic misogynist, twice expelled from the Alabama Supreme Court. That former Supreme Court Justice Roy Moore has won the GOP U.S. Senate nomination. And Republicans, by the way, are now all in for him, despite him being a proud, open, homophobic, Islamophobic scofflaw who puts his personal religion before the U.S. Constitution and the rule of law. And my guest on yesterday's broadcast, which, by the way, if you missed it, A, shame on you. B, you can download all of our broadcasts anytime for free at bradblog.com or your favorite podcast site or here at kpfk.org. Anyway, my guest yesterday, Mikey Weinstein of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, explained that the military brass under Donald Trump is now, many of them, forcing their Christian dominionist extremism religious beliefs on members of the armed forces in defiance of the Constitution and the Uniform Code of Military Justice at an even far greater rate than they were under George W. Bush. Really? Yeah, really. That's what he says. Very colorful conversation with Mikey Weinstein. I strongly suggest you download that, of course, only after you've finished listening to today's show. And then there's the quickly deteriorating situation in Puerto Rico, with 3.5 million U.S. citizens in peril, many without water, fuel, or electricity. And Trump continues to go on about NFL players exercising their constitutional rights for peaceful protest against racialized police violence. So, got any thoughts on all of that? I'll try to open the phone lines in a bit. As I say, 818-985-5735. And hey, by the way, Trump supporters out there, and I know we got a lot of them who listen, and people who otherwise disagree with me, give us a call. Stay on the line, though. Don't hang up. I always try to get to you, and you hang up. I'll try to get to you first if I can. Some of you just call in to talk to the call screener, tell them how wrong I am, but you won't stay in the line to tell me on air in person. Please do. I'd love to have you. I don't bite too hard. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. Also coming up a little bit later on the show, Desi Doyen and the Green News Report, our latest report on the deteriorating situation in Puerto Rico. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hey, but hey, we also have some good news.
Yeah.
Just
we
wait
do.
For it. It's
wait
there.
For it. It's good. Well, here's the hint. It's good for folks in the Pacific Northwest, at least.
There you
right?
go. Well, I think it's good for all of us.
It is good for all of us, yeah. And a couple, Des, before you go, I want a couple of items here we didn't have time for in this latest Green News report that I want to touch base quickly on with you here.
Okay.
The Trump administration is restricting lawmakers in both parties from visiting the islands, the Caribbean islands, Puerto Rico, and so forth, on military aircraft this weekend to, they say, to keep focused on the recovery mission there, according to congressional aides.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
Not buying that?
No, I think it brings too much attention, is what they want to try to avoid. Although there is some aspect of that does make sense, you know, that there are issues with security and having to tie up folks who are there trying to get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't think that's really the reason.
No, I don't think so either. Multiple attempts have been underway, apparently, in recent days. Members of both parties have been trying to travel to Puerto Rico on military aircraft, and they're being told by the Trump administration, no, you can't do it. We're not going to help you. At least 10 members of the House and Senate were hoping to travel this Friday as part of a delegation organized by Senate Democrats, and followed by another joint trip on Sunday, organized by others, according to two aides. Mind you, these are lawmakers. These are Congress members, senators, and representatives who will need to pass legislation for the relief aid and so on and so forth. They're not being allowed, essentially, to go to the island by the Trump administration. I don't know if there's any, if this has ever been done.
They already have a public relations problem right now because they've taken so long to get the relief effort underway to ramp it up to the scale that it needs to be for this. So, you know, granted, there are issues with trying to get that relief aid distributed throughout the island because of the loss of all the infrastructure. But, you know, I think this is just they're trying to keep the PR limited.
Since Monday, permission to use military aircraft to make the trips has been denied by the White House and the Pentagon, according to these congressional aides. Trump said, of course, he's going, however, on Tuesday. He's going to be there. Finally, he's going to Puerto Rico next Tuesday. So no one else can go on Friday, on Sunday. But he'll go on Tuesday. He might also visit the U.S. Virgin Islands. One other point there, CBS Market Watch has reported that since September 20, when Hurricane Maria made landfall on the U.S. territory, through Wednesday afternoon of this week, Trump has sent a total of 96 tweets during that period, 96 tweets and retweets. Those mentioning Puerto Rico, a total of 7 out of those 96 tweets, most of which either placed blame on Puerto Rico itself for their for the trouble they're now facing, or they included praise about his own handling of the situation there. So that's 7 tweets out of 96 since it landed in since it made landfall in U.S. territory. In contrast, he's put out 26 tweets related to the NFL players kneeling during the national anthem. Since Saturday morning, by the way. So just to give you an idea about what our president is most interested in.
Priorities.
Yes, priorities. And U.S. citizens, 3.5 million of them in Puerto Rico. Well, they can go to hell, apparently. All right. So, anyway, you'll be back with the Green News Report and much more in a bit. Thank you, Des. I got a couple of voting stories that I want to try to hit here. One of them, well, they're both quite timely, but one of them in particular here in California for California voters. But I want to start in Wisconsin. This from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel late last night, I believe. The voting machines used by Racine County, Wisconsin, have been decertified by the Wisconsin Election Commission, with the order taking effect in November of 2018. The Optech Eagle voting machines that are used in Racine and a bunch of other areas across the state of Wisconsin are more than 2 decades old, and they have a significant flaw, says the Journal Sentinel. They have a significant flaw in regard to absentee voting that has caused concern in recent elections. Now, I've been concerned about this particular flaw for years, but finally they're starting to notice up in Wisconsin after 2 decades of using these machines. These machines can only read what the paper describes as carbon-based marks on a ballot, meaning absentee voters who use these paper ballot, who vote with a paper ballot that are then counted by these computers, they must vote using a pencil or a very special type of pen that most absentee voters from home wouldn't have. So they have to use a pencil or the machine completely ignores their marks. If they use a pen, the machine won't see it. So these machines are not only used, by the way, in Wisconsin. They're used throughout the county in Wisconsin, but it also affects a number of other states where these systems are used. Dozens of cities and towns across Wisconsin, which have long used this particular brand of paper ballot optical scan. But it's still used, the Optech Eagle, according to the Verified Voting's database, it's still used in 7 counties in Virginia, about 20 cities and towns in Massachusetts, 5 Indiana counties, and just 1 county in New Jersey, though it happens to be a huge one, Union County, where Elizabeth, New Jersey is located. More than 500,000 people who have been voting on these systems for years, hopefully using a pencil there. But hey, who knows? All state elections in Wisconsin from this week forward, the paper notes, that use the Optech Eagles will require poll workers to remake all absentee ballots and conduct all recounts by hand. Well, half of that is good news, the recounts part now finally being done by hand. But until they change these systems, election officials are going to have to remake those absentee ballots. What does that mean? Well, that means that poll workers will actually redo an absentee ballot. You send in your absentee ballot into your city, your town, your municipality in Wisconsin, and some poll worker is going to take that information and supposedly duplicate those ballots onto another system. Probably the touchscreen systems that they use across much of Racine, I believe. They'll duplicate it either accurately or not. Who knows? And while I'm happy to hear that any recounts will be conducted by hand for now, with those, at least with the paper ballots in Racine County, at least until they find new systems, they did not conduct recounts by hand after Donald Trump is said to have won the state of Wisconsin by a very, very slim margin last November. Many of Wisconsin's municipalities simply ran ballots back through the same optical scan machines, in this case, the Optech Eagle and other scanners that tallied them the first time. When they tallied them either correctly or incorrectly. Who knows? And I should note, by the way, it was the Green Party's Jill Stein who sought and paid for that so-called recount after Hillary Clinton chose not to do so in Wisconsin, in Pennsylvania, Michigan. Thank you. The third state. And they would not do a hand count there either for hundreds of thousands of ballots in Michigan, where they could have counted them by paper. But here, if they run the same machines, the same ballots through the same machines again, and they didn't count a vote because it was in pen instead of pencil, it wasn't going to count it the second time either. So, you know, for Democrats who are justifiably now concerned about whether, you know, the results were actually accurate, whether they were messed with, whether they were hacked in November. Well, you know what? You're a little bit late. You had a chance. You had a chance to hand count them. Wisconsin Election Commissioner Mark Thompson argued for the new absentee ballot and recount rules, citing a fear that not all of the absentee ballots in the November 2016 general election were tabulated accurately by these machines. Take your time, Mr. Thompson. Why rush? If someone asks for a recount, this organization is saying to do it by hand, said Thompson, because that's the best way to accurately make sure every vote counts. We know that the machine might not give us the right answer. He's saying that now, but last November, it was left up to the cities and towns whether they wanted a hand count or not.
Can we just talk about the idea that a state has used systems for quite a while now that
decades.
For decades, yep. Now that don't read certain types of marks at all, that they never bothered to tell anybody, and they knew about this.
Yep.
And then they defended that system for
yep.
years.
Yep.
Especially during one of the most important elections in United States history. I'm just kind of gobsmacked by that.
You're gobsmacked by it, and you're here every day listening to me go on and on about so much of this for years now, for like 15 years, and you're still gobsmacked about it.
Yeah, and so, and now we know from the 2016 election, all the bad guys know that the parties that be will stop any attempt to recount. So they can
yeah.
be pretty sure, hey, no one's going to bother to do this, or they'll try to stop it by going to
court. Of course, yeah. Well, when they say, well, at least we have a paper ballot. We don't need to hand count them. We can always go back if there's a recount, if there's any question about the results. Actually, no, we can't, as we saw in 2016. So anybody feel like going back now and counting those 2016 ballots by hand? Who knows if the chain of custody has been maintained, but those ballots still should be there by federal law for 22 months, at least where there are actual ballots. Count them by hand. Too late? Oh, well. I should also point out here that we reported earlier in the week on the broadcast a recent study by the University of Wisconsin finding that some 11.2% And that was the conservative number, 11.2% of eligible non-voting registrants. In other words, people who were eligible to vote but did not. In just two Wisconsin counties, Dane and Milwaukee, 11% said they were deterred from voting thanks to Wisconsin's Republican photo ID law. That adds up to about 17,000 people in those two counties alone. And again, that's the conservative side of this study. Remember, Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton by about 25,000 votes there, and 17,000 of them were deterred by this Republican photo ID law, which is something else I drive everybody crazy on. The late 2018 timeline for replacing those Optech Eagle paper ballot scanners in Wisconsin is apparently not just to coincide with that year's last general election, which includes the race for governor and U.S. Senate. According to election supervisor Rick Radecki in Racine, the main vendor for the Optech Eagle is a company by the name of Command Central. They have announced they will stop providing service and programming on those machines at the end of next year. So even if they wanted to continue using them, apparently they couldn't, or they wouldn't get any of the service or programming. Remember, this is an outside company that programs our public elections in Wisconsin, in Racine, Wisconsin. Command Central also, if that rings a bell to the to Bradcast listeners or bradblog.com readers, that's the same company that had been giving free touchscreen machine voting systems to Wisconsin towns in recent years in exchange for the old paper ballot opscan systems. Those 100% unverifiable touchscreen systems, as it turns out, were the very same ones, literally the very same ones that were decertified out here in California years ago because they were so easily manipulated. So the machines are not good enough for California, but hey, they're just fine for the not at all important state of Wisconsin, I guess. And now I'm guessing that many of these cities and towns in Racine will be getting more of those 100% unverifiable touchscreens. So congratulations, Wisconsin. Meanwhile, back here in California, listeners may recall that a few weeks ago on this show, we discussed California Bill AB 840 with election integrity expert Jim Soper of the California National Task Force on Voting. He urged California listeners at the time to call members of the state assembly to ask them to block AB 840 after the Senate had pretty much out of nowhere, the state Senate had added these provisions to it that would keep some 40% of California ballots from being included in the state's post-election, random post-election spot check, which they call an audit, a hand audit of ballots. This new bill would keep some 40% of those ballots from being tallied at all in this random spot check. Well, I am told a lot of folks did call into the assembly and the Senate, but it was not apparently enough to prevent the legislation, which is supported by state Democrats and the Democratic Secretary of State, Alex Padilla, for some reason. Did not stop that from those calls did not stop the bill from being passed by both chambers of the state legislature. And it now sits on the desk of California Governor Jerry Brown, awaiting his signature or hopefully his veto. New information from the Department of Homeland Security now late last Friday may provide more ammo for election integrity experts and voters, frankly, who are urging a veto for this terrible bill from the governor. This information and this bill, which would make California's already lousy post-election manual audits even worse. And I should note here, by the way, that California has one of the best post-election audit processes, and it is terrible. It's still one of the best in the country, just to give you some idea of how seriously officials seem to take public election oversight in this country. They don't, many of them. All right, so according to Capital Public Radio in San Francisco, federal officials told California on Friday that Russians probed the state's election system for vulnerabilities before the 2016 elections. This came from the Department of Homeland Security. California, we are told, is one of 21 states where this happened. Now, setting aside that they also told Wisconsin that same thing. And when Wisconsin tried to get more information, Wisconsin discovered that, guess what? The Department of Homeland Security actually had zero evidence or information to support this charge. I had Michael Haas some audio. I don't have time to play it now, but he was actually on MSNBC and said, yeah, DHS told us that Russia tried to scan our election system before the November election. But then when I asked for information about it, guess what? They had no information. It turned out that the scanning they were referring to was to a completely different state organization, a state agency that had nothing to do with elections whatsoever. It was like a labor department or something in Wisconsin. So setting that aside, and never mind for now that the DHS has admitted that they never actually checked any actual voting machines or any actual ballots since the election to discover if the tallies were accurate at all. Setting all of that aside for the moment, this new information in California is apparently raising new questions about whether the AB 840 bill that is on the governor's desk should actually be signed. Capital Public Radio cites cybersecurity experts who say that the measure could weaken California's voting system. Well, thank you for noticing. And thank you for noticing whether it's Russia or China or Iran or France or Germany or some guy from Toledo, Ohio, or, by the way, an election official themselves who has access to our voting machines. The people, the voters, need to be able to know after an election that results are accurate, whether the system has been inappropriately accessed or manipulated or not. The people need to know that. But AB 840 will make it so that all provisional ballots and all late-arriving vote-by-mail ballots will not be included in the post-election random hand count, this 1% sample. California relies on machines to tabulate the millions of paper ballots that are cast during an election. But counties do this manual audit of these of 1% of precincts afterwards. And the bill now on Brown's desk clarifies that those audits do not have to include late arriving ballots. So, you know, and that's millions of ballots. If you want to game an election in California, here's what you do. You do it with absentee ballots and you send them those in the day before the election. That way they come in after the election. In California, I think we still accept these ballots for 3 days after the election. Then you can game the system all you want, apparently, because those ballots are not going to be checked. Then you can, you know, change the scanners, do whatever you want. Now, when this bill was passed, election officials, many of them, apparently, including our Secretary of State, many of them apparently really hate post-election audits. They argued that the audit was only to make sure that the voting machines were working at all, not to determine if the results they reported were accurate. So there's no reason to include those late by mail-in ballots and those provisional ballots. If we've checked a few ballots and the machines were right for those, then everything is fine. This is not only a California issue. This is how election officials across the country tend to regard post-election audits. Check a few ballots. If the machines seem to have counted those correctly, then the machines worked. They're not checking if the results were actually accurate. Election cybersecurity experts, however, like our friend Jim Soper, say that that creates an opening for malicious actors who could exploit it. In fact, as Soper told us here on the show, it presents a roadmap to fraudsters. Computer scientist David Jefferson, a longtime cybersecurity expert at Livermore National Labs, and for some five consecutive California secretaries of state, he's been an advisor on voting systems. He's been a guest on this show many times over the years. He now chairs the election transparency group, verifiedvoting.org. Here was his comment to Capital Public Radio on this this week.
The 1% manual tally is intended to be an end-to-end check on the correctness of the tally. And you can't do that if you exclude a large fraction of all the ballots cast.
Yeah, But that's what we're doing, or at least that's what we will be doing here in California, the largest jurisdiction in the nation, voting jurisdiction in the nation. We'll just be ignoring about half of those ballots. James Schwab of the California Secretary of State's office told lawmakers that many counties have always done their audits this way because waiting for all the ballots to come in, that would take too long. AB 840 was passed in response to a San Diego court case filed after last year's election by yet another election integrity expert that we've had on this show, Ray Lutz, down in San Diego. The judge found in his favor that the rule of law said that all ballots must be included in this post-election random audit. So what did the lawmakers here in California do? They just changed the law. Counties said that the ruling by the judge created ambiguity over how they're supposed to conduct the manual tally. Actually, the law is very clear on this, but that's what they claimed, and so they just changed the law. Brown now has 3 weeks to act on this bill. If you are a California resident and you'd like to let Governor Brown know how you feel about AB 840 and whether he should sign or veto this bill, you can reach his office at 916-445-2841. That's 916-445-2841. You can also find him on the web at gov.ca.gov. You can get more info on AB 840 at countedascast.org/stopAB840. By the way, Jim Soper asked me to mention today the National Voting Rights Task Force is having a National Election Integrity Conference in October. That's next week, October 7 and 8 up in Berkeley, California. If you'd like to come on by, you can go to NVRTF, National Voting Rights Task Force, NVRTF.org, and get tickets there. They asked me to come up and speak this year. I don't think I'm going to be able to get there, but if you're nearby, please do get there yourself. Okay, a quick break, and we'll come back with your calls on that, any questions on that, and all the other stuff going on this week from Puerto Rico to North Korea to Iran to this election, this Roy Moore. Should Democrats, by the way, they're doing really well when it comes to taking away GOP seats in the state legislature. Should they, their Medicare for All bill that Bernie Sanders put forward, is that the, would that be the answer? Should they embrace that? Would that be the answer to taking back the House and or Senate this fall? I'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on that or anything else is on your mind. 818-985-5735. I'm Brad Friedman. This is your Bradcast. Don't go away. Welcome back to your Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with you here. Oh, yeah, Desi reminds me, calls on the NFL and Donald Trump. And I think I forgot that because I wanted to forget it, because I think it's so stupid, because I think it's so obnoxious, because you've got 3.5 million people fighting for their lives down in Puerto Rico. And President Chaos is threatening NFL players and owners who have the temerity to exercise their constitutional rights by peacefully and respectfully protesting during the national anthem against police violence against African Americans. Oh, that's way more important, isn't it, for him to do that? Really? Brother, 818-985-5735 is our phone number, 818-985-5735. Let's get to some of your calls. Derail the show all you like. Tony from Redondo Beach, welcome to the Bradcast.
Hi there.
Hey there.
I just wanted to respond to the concern you have about the late ballots not being included in the audit.
Yeah.
And you realize that those ballots, the late ones, mm-hmm. go through a process where each one of them is handled by hand mm-hmm. by the election office, where they verify the signature, mm-hmm. verify the identity of the voter, And in the cases of a provisional ballot, they verify that this is a ballot that can be cast in that area. So these go through special scanning before they're counted.
Right. Point being?
The point being is that the overall random audit is just to check that the machinery is working correctly.
According to whom? It's
according to the election officials.
By the way, Tony, are you an election official?
No, I'm not.
Okay. According to the law, it has nothing to do with checking the machines. It has to do with checking the results. You heard David Jefferson, who has been one of the top advisors to the last, I think, five secretaries of state here in California. And I'm not sure, are you suggesting that the fact that election officials handling these ballots themselves in secret should make us less concerned about the computers tabulating them correctly when they are scanned?
Well, you can't determine the overall results by a spot check, by a percentage check. You'd have to count all the votes to confirm the accuracy of the election.
Well, that sounds good to me. But that said, 1%...
That would be simply a recount, correct?
Well, I don't consider it a recount because they were tallied by computers. So I don't, you know, nobody knows. It's impossible to know whether they were accurately counted in the first place by those computers unless we count them by hand. So I don't consider that a recount. I consider that a count, a hand count, the first count, the only count that actually confirms that our election results are accurate.
Well, I think it's overblown concern that these late ballots that come in, and there's a long process. They have to verify the signatures on the ballot. They have to do that by hand.
Yeah.
It takes time.
Yeah.
And that adds on more time. Now, at present, they don't require all the ballots to be recounted. They do a statistical test to find out whether or not
they do 1%. They're supposed to do 1% of all the ballots cast. Right now, they are not doing 1% of all the ballots cast.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just wanted to throw in my two cents that I think that these late ballots are scrutinized much more than the ballots that are cast.
They're not scrutinized at all, though, Tony. And I appreciate your two cents, but they're not scrutinized. You're talking about whether they're fraudulent ballots, whether they're, whether the provisional ballot, whether the voter had the right to vote. I'm talking about the results of the election. That here we are. What are we, 8 months now since November? And people don't know if the presidential election was tallied correctly. In the most shocking upset victory in the history of the United States. And even there, we are not allowed to hand count the paper ballots. Why is that such a difficult, why is that such a troubling concern for you?
You're talking about, I wasn't arguing that.
Yeah,
I was arguing the point that you said that the system could be gamed by some forces sending in late ballots.
Yeah.
The system is much harder to game that way.
Well, here's how I would do it, Tony. I would just send late ballots have an insider at the Secretary of State's office that those particular ballots that come in late, those are the ones that we actually scan that we actually flip results on.
Sorry, say that again.
So any ballots that come in after a certain period of time that are late, either provisional ballots or late vote-by-mail ballots, the computer should count those differently than they count all of the other ballots.
How would they count them differently?
Let's say add one extra Democratic vote for every four Democratic votes that come in.
How is that counting them accurately?
That's not counting them accurately. That's my point. Those would not be noticed if someone decided to game the system that way. Anyway, Tony, I got a lot. What's that?
Okay. Well, these ballots are checked extensively.
No, they're not, Tony. And I really do appreciate the call and your thoughts,
okay,
but they're really not.
They're not. But if you want to look up the law, just go to your county registrar's office and see how it's done.
Very good. I have been to many a county registrar's office. I appreciate that, Tony.
Well,
I appreciate your insight there. The fact is, Tony is talking about whether they're fraudulent ballots, whether the signatures match. He is not talking about the results. I am talking about the results of our election, any election across California and, frankly, across the country. So, yes, 818-985-5735 is our phone number. Let me go to Greg in Los Angeles. Hey, Greg, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Brad. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Fine. I'm a listener. I want to thank you for your show. And I was just interested in finding out if you knew the needs of the people that have been devastated by these recent events, not only here in the United States and Puerto Rico, but also Mexico, what the needs are in those locales and what our U.S. government has done, if anything, to support those groups of people. Do you happen to have information on that?
We'll have actually a few thoughts on that in our Green News report coming up. But basically, okay. they need fuel, they need food, they need diesel. And you can go to UnitedForPuertoRico.com. I hope that's the right address. UnitedForPuertoRico.com, which is was set up by the Puerto Rican governor to explain some of their needs and how you can donate and help out and so forth.
Thank you. Is there anything comparable for Texas, do you know?
I'm sure there is, but I don't have the URL handy here. I know you can check the Red Cross, and I think there was it was Hands On Texas, I think was I don't want to give the wrong address. But yes, there are places for Texas and for Florida and for Puerto Rico where you can help out. And thanks in advance for that, Greg. I appreciate that. Appreciate that call.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. Let me go to Gloria in L.A. Hey, Gloria, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, thanks for the program. I think I might be speaking for more than myself, Brad. I just tuned in late.
Mm-hmm.
So could say clearly about ABA40, whether it's no or yes to get Brown to do the right thing.
It's AB840, and if he signs this bill, about half of the ballots in California will never be checked in a hand count audit, a post-election audit.
No.
So, well, I don't want to tell you what to do one way or another, but I would be personally, I'm against the bill. I would ask the governor to veto it. AB840.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you for calling in, Gloria. I appreciate that. Once again, the governor's phone number. Wait, where is it? I had it here. Somebody ought to organize this show. Desi Doyen. There we go. 916. I'm just going to blame you randomly. 916-445-2841 is to reach the governor. 916-445-2841. Our phone number is to get on the show is 818-985-KPFK. All right, let me go to Nick in Northridge. Hey, Nick, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hey, Brad, how are you doing?
Thanks I'm okay. You bet. What's up?
Well, I have a couple of things to say. You know, like you've been saying for quite some time now, the voting system in America is pretty much one of the largest flaws that we have in our institution, you know, in our institutions, and it's not for lack of people offering, you know, a good way to do things. You know, there's a gentleman who invented a voting machine that would give you a paper receipt and hold on to a paper receipt that could be verified later. And that guy mysteriously got run off the road or something, you know, a decade ago.
Yeah, I remember. You know? I know that. I remember that story very well, although I would note that was it was about 10 or 15, actually. Yeah, about 15 years ago at this point. And that system was also a touchscreen system. And one of the reasons that, though at the time, it would have been a great improvement over what we are now using, but you never want to give a receipt to anyone to leave the polling place showing how they voted, because that allows you to buy and sell your vote. It allows your boss at work to say, hey, if you don't come in and show me the right, you voted the right way, then you're fired. But yeah, we don't need, this is not, I've been saying for years, not rocket science. Just count the ballots by hand publicly. That's it. Easy.
You know, and these voting, the people who make these voting machines also make ATMs. And how often are they wrong?
More
often do they get broken into, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I appreciate that, Nick. Actually, yeah. And I got a lot of calls to get to. I'll just answer this by saying actually they're wrong more often than you think. But the difference is with ATMs, you and I and the banks and everyone else and the ATM companies are able to look at those transactions after they're made. So if the if you say you made a deposit of $100 and then the bank says no, well, you can show them the receipt, they can go back and check it. None of that is true with your vote. When you drop it into your secret vote into the ballot box, you can't check it again to make sure that it was recorded accurately. That's why we need to vote and we need to count publicly at the precinct. Count by hand in front of everyone on election night.
And, yeah, I hear you. And
yeah.
I also would. You asked about whether the Democrats should be pushing Bernie Care, and I do think they should.
Okay.
But we need to get away from the rosy. It's going to be good for everyone, just because it's the nice thing to do. And we need to give hard statistics and inform the people as to why this is going to benefit all of us.
I appreciate that thought, Nick. And I would point folks to an article that was written by Ernie Canning, our legal analyst at bradblog.com this week on Bernie's Medicare for All proposal and Ernie's argument that, in fact, it would lead to Democrats winning big time this November in both houses of Congress. He's got a whole bunch of facts in there about Medicare for All, about single-payer systems. Go to bradblog.com, scroll down a few items, and you'll find that there. All right, very quickly, do we have time before the break here? Dez, you're on deck with Green News Report. Stand by. Julie in Orange County. Hey, Julie, welcome to the Bradcast.
Hey, yeah, Brad. So there is, sampling in voting has been going on for hundreds of years, and there's a science to it. And Ray Lutz, I worked with last year, and, you know, there's a reason for choosing 1%. So it's called the scientific method, and it's accurate. And so there shouldn't be any question in Brown's mind about should we do half or not or whatever.
That so you agree that he should veto AB 840?
I don't know. I'll have to look at the wording, but I think he should count 1% of the vote.
A full 1%, not just a fraction of that 1%.
Right.
Gotcha. All right. Thanks, Julie. Appreciate that call. And you're in Orange County where they have, still 100% unverifiable touchscreens. So,
by the way, Brad, I should tell you something.
Yeah.
I've worked at the polling, and I've been told that absentee ballots are only counted if the outcome is a squeaker.
No, not true. Totally untrue. Fake news, Julie. Fake news.
Well, that's what they told us.
Yeah. I would be shocked if anyone who actually knew what they were talking about told you that, Julie. No, that's not true. They count every single ballot. Whether they count it correctly or not, I can't tell you. You got a good registrar, actually, down there, Neil Kelly in Orange County. Check with him. I would, suffice to say, no, they count ballots. Accurately or not, I don't know, but they count every vote, no matter how close any election is or isn't. All right, we'll try to get to some of your calls after the Green News Report. If time, our phone number is 818-985-5735. Going to take a quick break here. We'll be back with Desi Doyen and the GNR. And Mo is online. We will try to get to you, Morris. Hang on. This is Brad. This is your Bradcast. Yes, we will. Hey, Desi Doyen.
Hey.
No calls really on the NFL? I thought everybody was gonna. That's actually good news. I'm kind of glad to hear it.
I know.
Maybe people out here in Southern California are too smart for that sort of thing.
I hope so.
To fall for that nonsense. All right, we'll try to get back to some of your calls in a moment, but first let's get to what Donald Trump should have put first long ago: Puerto Rico. As covered in our latest Green News Report.
3.5 million Americans are on the brink, or in some cases in the midst of a humanitarian crisis that does not seem to be getting better.
Puerto Rico descends into desperation after Hurricane Maria.
The red tape has to be ripped off as if it was a Band-Aid.
Trump administration finally grants waiver on shipping restrictions to the island of 3.5 million U.S. citizens. Plus, some small bits of good news amid all the bad.
We'll take whatever we can get. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
As far as Puerto Rico is concerned, we have had tremendous reviews. We're doing a great job. Everybody has said it's amazing the job that we've done. So I think we've done a really good job. We are going to do far more than anybody else would ever be able to do.
Yep. Heck of a job, Trumpy. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I know Donald Trump is doing a fantastic job down in Puerto Rico. He's told me so himself over and over again. But what's the real story now, more than a week after Hurricane Maria?
Well, unfortunately, Puerto Ricans are still waiting for aid to reach them a week, as you said, after Hurricane Maria devastated the U.S. island territory. The logistical difficulty of distributing emergency aid cannot be overstated when so much of Puerto Rico's roads, bridges, ports, and communications were completely destroyed. San Juan Mayor Carmen Yulin Cruz on MSNBC echoed other Puerto Rican officials who expressed gratitude for federal aid, but said that the scale of the disaster is so mind-bogglingly enormous that much more is needed.
We need diesel, we need gas, we need running water, we need some sort of way for people to find their way around, and we need our hospitals not to become death traps. So this is a big SOS for anybody out there.
The Defense Department says that only 44% of the island's residents have access to potable drinking water. That's 1.5 million people, and that out of 69 hospitals, only 11 have fuel for electricity. The lack of fuel has already caused the deaths of at least 2 patients in an intensive care unit. Senior citizens are trapped in high-rise buildings in the oppressive heat without food, water, or medicine. President Trump is set to visit Puerto Rico on Tuesday after being roundly criticized for tweets suggesting that Puerto Rico is somehow to blame for Hurricane Maria's catastrophic destruction.
And let's underscore this. The power is going to be out, as officials estimate, for 6 months in Puerto Rico. I mean, we've said over and over again this is a humanitarian crisis, but I don't think people understand the scale of the disaster and potential catastrophe that we're now looking at.
The Trump administration does appear to be ramping up its emergency response, deploying more U.S. military assets, including the U.S. Navy hospital ship The Comfort and the 101st Airborne Division, but those will take several days to arrive.
Yeah, well, take your time. That medical ship Comfort had been sitting there in dock at the U.S. mainland for days before it was even shipped out, and it's going to take days before it even gets to the island.
On Thursday, more than a week after the storm and after much criticism from both Republicans and Democrats, the Trump administration finally waived the Jones Act to speed up fuel deliveries. That's a century-old law limiting shipping between U.S. ports to only U.S.-flagged vessels, which also happens to increase costs. The administration waived the Jones Act in Texas and Florida after Hurricanes Harvey and Irma. Trump had told a press gaggle on Wednesday, quote, "There's a lot of people who work in the shipping industry that don't want the Jones Act lifted."
But they didn't mind lifting it for Texas and Florida, just not for the 3.5 million citizens in Puerto Rico. Got it.
In response, the former head of U.S. Foreign Disaster Assistance said Trump's reasoning, quote, "almost sounds like profiteering by U.S. shipping companies off an emergency like this."
Well, what good are natural disasters if someone can't profiteer off them?
And by the way, federal aid is also slow to reach the U.S. Virgin Islands, which were also devastated by Hurricanes Irma and Maria and are also in dire need. The similarities to the Bush administration's botched response to Hurricane Katrina are striking, although this is on a much broader scale. Despite the humanitarian disaster in Puerto Rico, Trump and congressional Republicans on Wednesday focused on their proposals to enact massive tax cuts. Amid all of the bad news, however, some good news. The nation of Nicaragua will ratify the United Nations Paris Climate Agreement as an act of solidarity with nations suffering climate change impacts. That leaves just the United States and Syria as the only outlier nations not a part of the global accord to act on climate change.
I'm very proud.
Finally, Washington State has denied a key permit for a huge proposed coal export terminal in Longview, Washington, intended to ship coal to China. State Ecology Director Maya Bellon rejected it on the grounds it would lead to unacceptable increases in local pollution and public health impacts. It was the last of six proposed coal export facilities for the West Coast. All have been canceled.
Well, that's some good news.
Yes.
I knew you'd find some somewhere.
We try.
For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Can't get no worse. I hope you're right about that, Des. Thank you very much for that report. I appreciate that. One quick correction here. A caller called in during the Green News Report to accurately point out I had mentioned that Orange County uses 100% unverifiable touchscreen systems. I'm wrong. They actually use 100% unverifiable systems that have a little wheel and turn on them. They're still direct recording electronic machines that are completely unverifiable. But I just wanted to point out they're not touchscreens. They actually use a little wheel and a cursor. My error there. Very quickly, let me see. Do I have time? Let me get to. Oh, he's always good and he's always fast. So let me go to our friend Morris. Hey, Mo, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Brad, what the feds need to do is establish a minimum standard for all voting protocols in all states. If they see there's some voter suppression at hand, don't seat the state winners.
You trust Donald Trump to set those federal standards, sir?
Are you kidding me? No, sir.
Well, when we say the feds need to set standards, he's the feds, Mo.
We're in trouble.
Tell me about it. Appreciate the call. All right, we got to get out here. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to all of the callers. Sorry I wasn't able to get to everyone today. I know Jim says Michigan was stolen in 2016. Couldn't get to you, Jim. Sorry about that. John wanted to talk about voting technology. My apologies. Anyway, thanks for calling in. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Until then, if you like, you can drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks and the Twitters, I am The Brad Blog. And of course, you can always find me at bradblog.com. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Until then, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.